There does indeed seem to be a certain tang in the air, said the lecturer in recent runes. Magic tastes like tin. Hold on a moment, said Ridcully. He reached up, pulled open one of the many drawers in his wizarding hat, and removed a cube of greenish glass. Here we are, he said, handing it to Ponder. Ponder took the thermometer and peered into it. Never used it myself, Ridcully said. Wetting a finger and holding it up has always been good enough for me.
It's not working, said Ponder, tapping the thermometer as the ship rocked under them. The needles... Whoa!
He dropped the cube, which was molten by the time it hit the deck.
That's impossible, he said. These things are good up to 1,000,000 thaums.
Ridcully licked his finger and held it up. It sprouted a halo of purple and octarine.
Yep, that's about right, he said. There's not that much magic anywhere anymore, shouted Ponder.
There was a gale behind the boat now. Ahead, the wall of storm was widening and seemed to be a lot blacker.
How much magic does it take to create a continent? Said Ridcully.
They looked up at the clouds, and further up.
We'd better batten down the hatches, said the Dean.
We don't have any hatches.
Batten down Mrs. Whitlow, at least. Get the bursar and the librarian somewhere safe.
They hit the storm. Rincewind dropped into an alley and reflected that he'd been in far worse prisons. The Exians were a friendly lot, when not drunk or trying to kill you, or both. What Rincewind looked for in a good jail were guards who, instead of ruining everyone's night by prowling around the corridors, got together in one room with a few tins and a pack of cards and relaxed. It made it so much more friendly. And, of course, easier to walk past. He turned, and there was the kangaroo, huge and bright and outlined against the sky. Rincewind shrank back for a moment, and then realised that it was nothing but an advertising sign on the roof of a building some way off and further down the hill. Someone had rigged up lamps and mirrors below it. It had a hat on, with some stupid holes for its ears to stick out, and it wore a vest as well. But it was certainly the kangaroo. No other kangaroo could possibly smirk like that, and it was holding a tin of beer.
"Where did you drift in from, Curly?"
said a voice behind him. It was a very familiar voice. It had a sort of complaining wheedle in it. It was a voice that kept looking out of the corners of its eyes and was always ready to dodge. It was a voice you could have used to open a bottle of wine. He turned, and the figure in front of him, except for a few details, was as familiar as the voice.
"You can't be called Dibbler," said Rincewind.
"Why not?"
"Because, well, how did you get here?"
"What? I just came up Burke Street,"
said the figure. It had a large hat and large shorts and large boots. But in every other respect, it was the double of the man who, in Ankh-Morpork, was always there after the pubs shut to sell you one of his very special meat pies. Rincewind had a theory that there was a Dibbler everywhere. Suspended from the neck of this one was a tray. On the front of the tray was written, Dibbler's Café de Fete.
"I reckoned I'd better get up to the jail early for a good pitch," said Dibbler. "Always gives the crowd an appetite, a good hanging. Can I interest you in anything, mate?"
Rincewind looked at the end of the alley. The streets were quite busy. As he watched, a couple of guards strolled by.
"Such as what?"
he said suspiciously, drawing back into the shadows.
"Got some good broadsheet ballads about the notorious outlaw they're going to top."
"No, thank you."
"Souvenir piece of the rope they're going to hang him with. Authentic."
Rincewind looked at the short length of thick string being dangled hopefully in front of him.
"Some people might say that had a hint of clothesline about it," he said.
Dibbler gave the string a look of extreme interest.
"Obviously, we had to unravel it a bit, mate," he said.
"And some people might pick holes in the suggestion that you could, philosophically speaking, sell lengths of rope before the hanging."
Dibbler paused, his smile not moving. Then he said,
"It's the rope, right? 3/4-inch hemp, the usual stuff, authentic, probably even from the same rope maker. Come on. All I'm looking for here is a fair go. Probably it's a pure fluke this ain't the actual bit that's going to go around his neck."
"That's only 1/2 inch thick. Look, I can see the label. It says Hill's Clothesline Co."
"Does it?"
Once again, Dibbler appeared to be looking at his product for the first time. But the traditions of the Dibbler clan would never let a mere disastrous fact get in the way of a spiel.
"It's still rope," he averred. "Authentic rope. Nah? No worries. How about some authentic native art?"
He rummaged in his crowded tray and held up a square of cardboard. Rincewind gave it an appraising look.